And welcome to Passport to Modern Jazz. This is a special B3 session with, can you believe it, and on his birthday, Mr. Eric Adcock.
Yeah, you're right, man. Thanks, D, for having me.
Wow, it took a while to put this finally together to get you in.
Well, I'm honored to be here. There's nothing more I like talking about than Hammond organ and good music, so thank you for having me.
Oh, we love B3, and it's a jazz show, so it's great. It kind of brings it down a little bit instead of, we could still do R&B, we could do a lot of different shows, but trying to stick to it. And wow, you've got a great list of really the foundations of B3.
Well, thanks, right, man. I tried to go through my collection, and it was really exciting. I didn't realize how much fun I'd have just looking through what I had. I kind of got re-inspired listening to these songs, and it was really tough trying to nail just a handful to kind of show a spectrum of what I dig about Hammond organ. And like you said, we could do a whole other show on soul organ and Booker T and all that. But, you know, I tried to keep to some of the jazz greats and giants like McGriff and Smith, and I think we're going to have a good show. I'm looking forward to hearing some of these songs.
I think so. And, you know, musicians, they do listen to jazz. I mean, everybody I know, I went and did a Ray Brown show once.
Oh, yeah.
And I went around and just asked all my Zydeco buddies, you know, what their favorite Ray Brown song was. And everybody, Pops, everybody, man. You know, not just Dion, not just cats that you know play jazz, but, I mean, everybody had a, oh, let me think about it, and then, bam, they come back with a Ray Brown.
Right. Totally. Ray Brown keeps coming back around. So, you know, same thing with, you know, with me. I don't think of myself as a jazz organ player. I'm really not a jazz organ player, but I love to play him in B3. But jazz, you know, as musicians who tour like yourself, you're always looking for something to inspire you. Yeah. And, man, jazz is just the ultimate music for me. It's just its level of soul and sophistication. In many ways, it's very much above even my technical level, which is great because I can just listen to it without having to critique it or try to figure out what chord that is. It really is something that still inspires me, and it's so great. And these players were just masters of what they did. And then, of course, you tie in a Hammond B3 organ, which is such a unique, strange, unworldly instrument to one of America's greatest art forms. And it's just a whole, my fingertips tingle with excitement because I just love the growl, the spit, the fire, the whisper of that organ. And some of the examples I brought today hopefully will demonstrate some of that.
Well, let's get to some music or we'll never get to any.
Okay.
What's the first track you got here?
Well, you know, you can't start playing a B3 show on the radio without giving props to the greatest, which was the incredible Jimmy Smith.
Amen.
I mean, he was renowned. I mean, he came out as the incredible Jimmy Smith. He was just great from day one. Story has it that he started off as a piano player, of course, like most folks do. And then he discovered Hammond organ in 1951. And he rented a warehouse, bought a Hammond, and just woodshedded for a year and came out the incredible Jimmy Smith. And the first song is not one of the earliest, but it's one of my favorites that just floored me. It's called The Cat. And what I really love about it is just the groove swings so hard. And by this time, Jimmy had, I guess, some money behind him in the record label, Blue Note. And they had a great big band arrangement by Lalo Schifrin, which sonically made this record just blow my mind. It's just one of the best sounding Hammond B3, big band horns, just full strength, blow your head off song. And in fact, this album, The Cat, went to number 12 on the Billboard pop music charts.
Wow.
Which is really kind of neat for a jazz artist, 1964. And in fact, the grooves and the horns and even some of the organ on this track have been sampled in modern day music many, many times. So let's hear The Cat.
Wow, excellent. You're listening to the KRVS Passport to Modern Jazz. Thank you. Wow, I almost remember that. That's a going way, way, way back.
1964.
Man, then that was a bunch to get through to make it through the top 40. There was a lot. There was a lot, man. Jazz players were—they were in the studio though. I mean, they were making the sessions.
Yeah, Verve, Blue Note, and I can tell you that song probably crossed over because that beat, that rhythm. I mean, if you put that on your hi-fi at any house party in America or around the world, if you don't shake with that, you got a hole in your soul.
It's boogaloo, man.
It is. It feels good, doesn't it?
It does.
And those horns come in and just knock your head off. I mean, just the arrangement and the sonic quality of that tune really, really just inspire me. But
he writes with Lalo Schifrin. He was doing a lot of work back then. He was always like the first arranger people would go to back then. There's so many movies and stuff that he did and scores, but people's records and their arrangements and their horn arrangements and stuff like that.
Right.
And then he would help sell, his name alone would help sell the record.
Well, not only that, but I also think his arrangements would help bridge. They'd take the great bebop and jazz guys from the club that nobody could hear, and with his arrangements, it really opened up the ears of the general American public with that big band orchestration and arrangements. And so I think he played a key role in helping get jazz, and especially in the 60s, to the masses.
Yeah.
But the next track I wanted to play, if you don't mind moving forward.
Let's go.
This is a really incredibly difficult song called The Champ by Jimmy Smith. It's 1956, and just keep this in mind. He only came onto the scene as a Hammond organ player in 51. So just a few short years, and he comes out with this masterpiece, which from a technical level I can't even touch, but most people can't touch. It takes like a Joey DeFrancesco to even get close to a song like this. Uh-huh. And I like it for so many reasons. It really shows in that time period, 1956, Jimmy Smith bringing Hammond organ to the hard bop style. And, it wasn't a trumpet, you know, or a saxophone. Here comes this big 450-pound monster with hot tubes in it and titanium tone generators and big Leslie speaker that's spinning, and he's bringing that to the hard bop scene. And another little side note about why I find this song so interesting from Jimmy is that Jimmy kind of had a special tone that he used throughout his career that's known as like the Jimmy Smith sound. It's the first three drawbars out with the third percussion on the organ. And I don't mean to get too technical, but
please do.
This example of the Champ does not show that sound at all. He's playing a very different register. And at the very end, he demonstrates some block chording that you'd heard piano players do, like Lloyd Glenn and many others at the very end, where it's just all five fingers full-fisted chopping some really hard chords at the end during a solo. And it's called The Champ, and I think it's appropriate because he was the champ.
Yeah, definitely. Passport to Modern Jazz, B3 show with Eric Adcock on his birthday. The Champ, here comes. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Whoa, dude.
heavy stuff, man.
Well, let's get to the next tune, and we'll talk some Hammond B3 after the next tune.
Cool, man. Well, the next song is one of the strangest Jimmy Smith songs I've ever stumbled upon, and it's called Cha-Cha from 1957, featuring Jimmy Smith, of course, on Hammond B3, the great Lou Donaldson on sax, Eddie McFadden on guitar, and Donald Bailey on drums. The reason why I chose this song is because it's like a very kind of cheeky, loungy Latin groove. It's a cha-cha. And it makes sense in 1957 that they might be trying to appeal more to the general listener, but they took great grooves. It's definitely not hard bop. And one of the ironies about this song, it's one of the few times I've heard Jimmy Smith being recorded on piano. So this is kind of a rare groove in my mind of Jimmy starting off the intro on Hammond B3 organ and then playing a great Latin solo that almost sounds like steel drums in my mind with his voicings on the piano. So let's hear Cha-Cha. Thank you.
man, bizarre, but going back to the times, not really.
Keeping you on your feet for sure.
You can see those albums and people going out, oh, let's get some cha-cha lessons.
Exactly. You know,
around here.
Yeah, yeah. I might everywhere. Do it tonight, man.
You know, hey, it's your birthday, man. You do whatever you want.
I might do a little cha-cha tonight with this song with my boo. But, yeah, I love that groove, you know, and I think the common denominator with all these songs for me, even though they're very different stylistically, is the groove. I mean, and, of course, the Hammond organ as the foundation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, and that's, man, that just, and we were going to talk about Hammond B3, especially on this cha-cha, it's I can even kind of tell it's kind of thin, and it's, I don't know which stops you pull, but the champ at the end and during the middle, that you said it's like all the stops are pulled out.
Yeah, full swell, you know, all the stops are pulled out, and they were doing real block. He was playing with block chords, which is very hard to do, you know, keeping the melody with a full fist of keys being pushed down at the same time, and very percussive but full. And then of course you throw that Leslie speaker on fast, and it opens up like a choir of angels in my mind. But a lot of folks may not know about a Hammond organ or what a Leslie speaker is. That might be foreign to some
people. Oh, no. I load them in when I see a B3 player come in. It's like, let me help you load in.
Well, you're the one guy I've ever met that thinks that way, because when I load in my B3, people scatter. I don't have any more friends at the end of the gig, because I try to load that thing off the stage and I can't find nobody to help me because they know better. That thing's heavy.
I just, hey, if you've got a sample, I don't care. Just B3. And usually, you know, if anything I've done, really keyboards, you know, Egan May, rest in peace, was always, you know, I don't care. Just a patch. Just right. A patch. I don't really care.
You love it that much, huh?
Oh, yeah, and it always just sounds great. It's always like, I know it sounds good, and then when I put it behind stuff that just I do, it doesn't seem, well, that shouldn't fit. It fits great.
Yeah.
It fits even better than I thought.
It's a great common denominator because it's so versatile, and the instrument itself hasn't been made in many, many years, since the 70s, and it's just very over-engineered and very complicated. It's, for those of you who may not know what it looks like, it's a big, beautiful wooden cabinet with two keyboard manuals and the tone generator, which spins inside of the instrument that gives it its different tones, is made of titanium, which is one of the reasons why they don't build them anymore, because it's very, very expensive, titanium. But the Hammond B3 has so many personalities that are so unique to itself. It's often imitated. I've played all these keyboards that kind of try to emulate the B3, and they're getting better. But nothing feels or sounds like the real thing. So it's worth pulling a trailer to me with, you know, 450 pounds of amazement in the back just to get that real sound. And you pair this organ with an interesting speaker called a Leslie speaker.
Yeah.
Which has horns on the top and bass baffles that spin in opposite directions. Yeah. And they give this Doppler effect, which is really true chorus. You know, you have guitar players hitting chorus pedals, but yeah, a Leslie is true chorus. It's throwing sound around the room, and it just sounds so warm. And, of course, this instrument is tube-driven. It's not solid-state or modern technology. It's old, warm vacuum tubes that light up full of fire, and you can manipulate the sounds with the drawbars or the stops, so to speak. And originally it was meant and designed by Lorenz Hammond to emulate the pipe organ, to kind of fool folks into thinking they could buy a pipe organ sound for their house. But it didn't take long for the blues, gospel, soul, and jazz musicians to grab hold of it.
And say, wait a minute.
And completely ruin the marketing plan for Hammond organ, you know, out of Chicago. So the instrument itself is just a beautiful personality, and you can do so many things with it. It can scream, it can spit, it can growl, it can purr, it can whisper, and you don't have to be an aficionado of music to feel the emotion that comes out of that instrument.
How did you figure out the stops? Like, the stops aren't, you know, if you get your first organ, you know, and you're taking organ lessons and you don't know anything about organ, and you get, you know, when it Wurlitzer brand or something, they always have, like, you know, oboe, this and that. It doesn't, like you're saying, it doesn't sound like an oboe, but that's a sound. But on a Hammond, it's a just drawbars. I don't know.
You have to manipulate them with your fingers, with your hands, and the analogy I give is every drawbar has eight different settings, and there's a big group of them. They're just like paint colors coming out of a paint tube onto a palette. And it's up to you manipulating those draw bars to find your own colors. And, I mean, for years and to this day, I still hunt down draw bar settings that I hear on records. And I'm trying to say, man, how did they get that? You know, how did they, what is the actual setting for that sound? How they, and it's elusive. And there's a few out there that are famous, like Jimmy Smith's standard sound of the first three out with the third percussion on. But it's hard. But my analogy simply is they're just colors of paint.
Yeah.
And you blend them to make the sound you want.
Are they set up like an overtone series?
Yeah, they're harmonics of each other. It gets very, very complicated, even above my understanding. But there's fundamental sounds and then harmonics of that sound. And you blend them and you blend the volume levels of each one, and you come up with this amazing color.
So are Leslie's are getting lighter, though. I just saw, I saw you with a, did I see you with a light, Leslie?
Never me. Mine are really heavy to where I need a doctor.
You got the wooden ones.
In fact, quick story. For a while, I would
sweat. Are you using two of them?
I use two Leslie's when I can, and that's just being arrogant. but when you've got two of those big Leslie speakers behind you and you flip that switch on fast and they start taking off, it's orgasmic. I don't know. It's just amazing to hear. You know, it takes off like a spaceship. But my wife,
I'm getting the frissons, man.
Yeah, you'll pass a frisson when you hear that. But my wife, who's, you know, definitely smarter than I am, you know, for years she saw me schlepping this Hammond around, and I'd wake up on Sunday morning after a gig. I couldn't even get out of bed. My back hurt so bad, you know. She finally convinced me to hire a roadie, Will Blackman, who's my right-hand man, and I'd be lost without him. But at first, I was against the idea. I was like, man, I barely make any money gigging as it is, and you want me to go pay this guy to haul this thing? And she says, Eric, he's cheaper than a neurosurgeon. And that's absolutely right.
That's great.
She's absolutely right.
So let's see. This next guy who we were going to do the show completely on Dr. Lonnie Smith, but he's kind of infamous for using a lot of different stops, right, and just switching in the middle of night, experimenting, really, in the middle of a gig.
Exactly. Dr. Lonnie Smith is still alive with us today and still touring and just
winning awards now.
Oh, yeah.
Even now.
He's coming into his element even more now, and he's been around for many, many decades. But to your point, Dr. Lonnie Smith is one of the most soulful, creative people, especially live on stage. He really paints the masterpiece right in front of you. He's very spiritual. He's a unique person. He wears a turban. He's kind of eccentric. But I got to meet him in New Orleans. He was one of the sweetest guys you've ever met in your life. I saw a Dr. Lonnie Smith show, and it just blew my mind. Because you've heard these records that are so creative to your point. You know, the tones are changing and they're very percussive. And he's just doing that live. And I've even seen him play with his hands on the bass pedals before, you know, just doing all these unique things. But one of the things I really love about Dr. Lonnie Smith is he's a soulful player. You know, some of the really heady jazz organ kind of goes over my head. But when Lonnie plays, it's just soulful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Sly Stone would have done that. You know, dug it. You know, Stevie Wonder loved Dr. Lonnie Smith. I mean, I'm just supposing they do.
Oh, of course.
He's just
of
greasy
course. James
and soulful.
Brown, of course, man.
Yeah, and, you know, and of course, coming up in the soul groove, 60s, 70s of Pam and organ times, these guys were influenced by James Brown and everything that was going on at that time, all the heavy backbeats and soul. And this was actually recorded at live at Club Mozambique in Detroit in 1964. And you'll hear, like, James Brown influences. This is kind of where the jazz and blues of Hammond organ starts to really evolve into the soul organ. But it's still being played by a jazz master. So when I hear this song, it's called Play It Back, George Benson on guitar, I think, man, if I ever had a band that was this funky and this solid, it would just blow my mind.
This is the George Benson band, I think.
Maybe so. I don't know the details on that, but he's on guitar on this track.
Right.
But just, I hope the listener hears this and just pictures themselves walking into a smoky club.
Because he was in the George Benson band.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
But I hope the listener, when they hear this track, just pictures themselves walking into a club in 1964 and hearing this freight train come off the stage right at him. I mean, it must have been amazing.
KRVS, Passport to Modern Jazz. and New Orleans by Lonnie Smith. We need to talk about one of your influences and somebody out there in the community of musicians right now being talked a lot about, and your biggest influences, and one of the main B3 players I ever saw play around here that everybody knows is Buckwheat.
Absolutely. Buckwheat Zydeco, homegrown. You know, all these organ players that we're featuring today, many of them come out the Philadelphia area, Chicago. But Buckwheat, who is renowned as one of the world's greatest accordion players and brought Zydeco all over the world, touring with Clapton and U2, well, he is an amazing, genius, soulful Hammond B3 organ player. In fact, that's his first instrument.
That's
really
his instrument with, I don't know how many sides, with Clifton.
Yeah, yeah, he played B3 with Clifton. And
then his band with Buck and 12th Street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Buckwheat and the Hitchhikers was his soul band back in the day, and then he played with Little Buck and the Top Cats, the big, you know, was it 17-piece horn band, recording at Lalu, putting down some of the funkiest stuff you've ever heard right here out of Lafayette, Louisiana. And knowing Buck has just been a complete honor and dream of mine to become close to him. It's hard to get too close to him because he's one of my heroes and idols, and you just can't get that close to those people because they're just so great, you know, in your mind. And he's been so kind to me and so wonderful. I know currently he's very much struggling with his health right now, but I'd rather focus on his greatness than his illness.
I think so. That's a great idea right now.
And he has just been so kind to me, taking me under his wing since I was probably 16 years old, going to El Cito's to watch him play. And then as I grew up, you know, him calling me on stage to sit in, which every time it's happened in my life is the single most amazing time for me in music in my career. And it's terrifying, and then I'm elated at the same time. And I'll just get behind that Hammond B3 organ and close my eyes and feel that amazing freight train groove that his band has. And then I just close my eyes and try to give back as much as he's given to me.
Yeah.
And we've had an opportunity to do that on many occasions. And to have Buckwheat just look at me and give me that million-dollar smile, it just means everything. And he's been such a gentleman. You know, he could have easily over the years, with his greatness on the Hammond B3, invited me up and then smoked me or embarrassed me or, you know, just took me to school. And he always takes me to school, don't get me wrong. But he does it in a very gentle way, almost like the passing of the licks. He's just like anybody you've known that's great. They're more than happy to show you what they got.
Oh, yeah.
Because they know you can't
it's
do
amazing.
It.
It's amazing.
They know you can't do it anyway. Like, they can. But
it's amazing, but they have nothing to hide. They're so great. They have nothing to hide.
Of course. And he's very gracious. And when I think of Buckwheat, I mean, he and I have talked so many times after shows about Jimmy McGriff, Jimmy Smith, you know, some of these same artists we're listening to right now. And he's always talked about Jimmy Smith. And, in fact, a couple of Buckwheat records, he's given tributes on Hammond B3 to Jimmy Smith. But in my mind, and I think I told Buck this once, he plays the most like Jimmy McGriff. And the reason why I say that and the reason why I love Jimmy McGriff is because Jimmy, being a great jazz artist, he was really a soul organ player. I mean, he played with a lot of soul. It wasn't hard bop as much as it was grease, you know what I mean? And when I hear Buckwheat play, I think of McGriff. Just his phrasings, his style. There is a early Buckwheat record of Party Down at the Blue Angel Club, the famous Clifton Chenier song, where Buckwheat's playing nothing but Rhodes through a phaser and Hammond B3. And he takes no accordion, and he takes this Hammond B3 solo that to this day may be one of the greatest that's ever been recorded, where he's manipulating the drawbars at the same time of his solo. He makes that Hammond organ sound like it has a wah-wah pedal on it. Just very inventive. You know, many musicians can play or emulate others, but the greatest musicians invent things.
Yeah.
And they take an instrument to a new level with the way they think. And Buckwheat from Lafayette, Louisiana, homegrown, is one of the hands-down greatest Hammond B3 players in history, in my opinion.
Wow.
Let's hear a Jimmy McGriff song
with
Charles Erland, two Hammond organists at one time, called Groovin' Blues, which reminds me of the way how Buckwheat plays. What's great about this track is it's recorded live, and Charles Erland was actually Jimmy McGriff's saxophone player back in the 60s. But this recording is much more recent, and these two giants are just blowing my mind on this track.
KRVS is licensed to the University of Louisiana at Lafayette by the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. We operate on an assigned frequency of 88.7 megahertz with an effective radiated power of 100,000 watts. KRVS is also authorized to operate Aural Studio Transmitter Links WHB 300 and WLJ 739 on a frequency of 946 megahertz. KRVS studios are located in Burke Hawthorne Hall on the campus of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, with main transmitter facilities located in Maxey, Louisiana, and backup transmitter facilities in Doosan, Louisiana. This Doosan property is made possible through an agreement with the Lafayette Parish School System, creating a brighter future and partnership with the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find out more about KRVS and listen online at our website at krvs.org.